Trevor, let me turn it back over to you, and let's take some questions.
Great, Jeff. Chanel, we're ready to go to the questions right now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Our first question comes from Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Good
morning, Steve.
So just on the aviation front, Europe down pretty dramatically, but the margin was still okay in spite of that. You said it's going to improve a little bit in the back half. How do we think about aviation margin as we kind of turn the corner in the back half and in third quarter?
Well, I think if you look at, the quarter, we were 19% margins down from 20 last year. You know, really, the good news in aviation, the good news, bad news on margins is we're getting tremendous equipment growth, and then we have a negative on equipment service mix, Steve. I would expect that you're going to continue to see that. We have a tremendous backlog on a commercial equipment, but you've seen a couple other points in aviation. The R&D as a percent of revenue is leveled off. They're controlling their costs, and the improvements that they've made on everything they're doing with the launch of the Gen X, you know, continue to help us as we look at the pressure that the Gen X engines deliver. So I think if you look, the orders for aviation were down, spare orders were down in the quarter, right? We went down from in the quarter, just let me get the ADR. Last year, you know, first quarter was 23 a day, second quarter was 20.6. Last year was 27 in the third quarter, Steve. We do not anticipate that we're going to get back to that level. But I do anticipate that, and the business is forecasting, that we'll be up, you know, in the mid-single digits over the second quarter levels that we saw. So, you know, I think aviation is one that, we're confident about the outlook for the year of being positive in terms of op profit. In the third quarter, there's one item. Last year we had a gain, if you remember, it's about $70 million that won't repeat. So that, you know, in the third quarter, I'm not anticipating a really big margin number for these guys, but we do anticipate an improvement in spares over the second quarter. And we do anticipate them to be positive on op profit for the year.
Gotcha. And then just one last question on the energy business. Thermal pricing up 5%. Orders were down, obviously a pretty tough comp. How booked are you guys from a thermal perspective? How booked are you guys for next year? My guess is your visibility is obviously getting better as you get closer there. Do we expect more orders here in the second half of the year, given that, you know, I think your book-to-bill is still below 1 in thermal, but the pricing is obviously picking up very nicely, showing the market's tightening, which is a positive. But I guess, how can you give us a sense as to how booked you are if we were to assume a flat growth year in turbines? How booked are you for next year?
Sure, I don't have the exact turbine number, but I would say right now our business is about flat with what we normally would see in terms of booked orders, and we're about normal on commitments that are things that the team is working as you look to a flat year in gas turbines for next year. We're going to have that big infrastructure meeting in September, and we'll give you a nice update there, I would say.
I mean, that should grow, right, next year, I would think?
I think we'll be up a little bit, Steve, but it's still early. You know, I'd say the commitments are still early in the process, but, you know, I still think, the overall market's firming.
Great. Thanks.
Yep.
Our next question comes from Scott Davis with Barclays.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Scott.
Good
morning, Scott.
Guys, can you give us a little bit of color on kind of the timing and why John Kroenicke is leaving with the reorg?
Yeah, you know, Scott, John and I have been working on this for, 6 or 9 months. I think, with all the acquisitions and everything, we had a $50 billion company within a company. And I think from our standpoint, really as an operating company, I think the idea to get a little bit faster and more focused on those three businesses seemed to be a logical position. And I think John saw it the same way. We discussed him taking other roles inside the company, substantive roles inside the company, and I think his sense is that it's a good time to kind of think about other things that he can do. You know, John and I have worked together for 25 years. I think this is just one of those natural evolutions in GE that we do as time goes on to better match up with the markets. You know, the business itself is in very strong shape, and, you know, in some ways that makes change easier.
Fair enough. One of the questions we get quite a lot, Jeff, is kind of where you guys want to be in mining, longer term. and maybe this is a good time to talk about what you know what you want to be, you know, what your strategy in mind is, kind of what's the end game, where do you want to be, how do you get there?
You know, Scott, what I would say is that you've got positioning around, you know, we already have a big business in propulsion. We've already got a pretty big business in power conversion kind of around the mine. You know, it fits our footprint from a standpoint of product service, global footprint, energy, water. So we have a nice package of products for it. You know, I kind of look at it the same way I looked at oil and gas 10 years ago. I don't see doing big acquisitions. I think we can grow sequentially. So I would look at it as a good additional segment where we're about $2 billion in revenue a year. We can grow probably 10% in an orderly way, relatively high margins, and do it over time as a nice way to leverage our footprint. But I don't think you're going to see anything big or sudden from us as it pertains to mining. I just think, you know, we look at it as a sequential build.
Sure. Okay, thanks. I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
The next question comes from Terry Darling with Goldman Sachs.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, guys, I wonder if you'd talk a little more about your margin confidence, both for the second half and for 13. I guess in the second half, aviation's pretty locked and loaded. But maybe come back to the execution challenge on the ramp up in wind volumes and how you feel like the supply chain is looking in that context to start. And then, Jeff, on 2013, talk about 100 basis points of expansion there. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what you see as the drivers there and how contingent that is on, you know, on the global macro growth rates, you know, implied.
So, Terry, I think if you go back to EPG, we said 30 to 50 basis points this year and 100 basis points in total over 12 and 13, right? And I think that's kind of still the way we look at it. So if you take a look, we go positive in Q3. Energy drives a big chunk of that. You know, I think we're kind of hitting our sweet spot a little bit in energy, and we see that to be very strong. We also see, you know, good expansion in our transportation business. We have some easy comps in home and business solutions that make margin enhancement there actually relatively easy. Keith talked about the aviation margin outlook. And healthcare, we had some execution issues that shouldn't repeat going into third quarter. So I see healthcare going positive in Q3 as well. So we'll have basically four or five segments positive in Q3 with energy, you know, actually very strong in that context. And then if you think about the big levers we've got value gap. You know, Terry, I think value gap is positive and will remain positive going into 13. You've got service margins. Service margins continue to be positive both this year and next. We've got simplification. You know, you've seen what our goals are in simplification, and we're going to, you know, continue to work at the GE footprint. And then you've got product costs. And I've got a ton of projects going around the company to get our product costs down. So I think, you know, on the macro side, you know, kind of we prepared ourselves for a pretty tough year this year, you know, and certainly a volatile year. We haven't been disappointed. You know, we've seen that volatility play through, particularly in Europe. And we're going to be equally prepared when you think about 13. So I would see margin expansion this year between 30 and 50 basis points. And then next year, you know, I think that'll make up for the total of 100, so between, let's say, 50 to 70 basis points next year. And then you're going to have, you know, between, let's say, 13 and 11, you're going to have at least 100 basis points of expansion over that time period. And I actually see that turning the corner, and I think third quarter is going to be pretty good.
The close in the second quarter, and if you look at the margin performance in energy and the margin performance across the portfolio, down 20 basis points versus the first quarter, down more than that, down 50. You know, I feel really good about the progress we're making, and we turned the value gap positive, as Jeff said. R&D as a percent of revenue has gone into a positive. Total cost productivity is positive, and the only issue we're wrestling with is the service equipment mix here in the second quarter. That's a good news problem for us. So I you know, we've made a lot of progress on it, and then the cost out, I think, is the adder that you're going to see us really kick in as we get into 13.
So, I mean, confidence in the margins despite the, you know, the softer macro out there, you know, more company determined factors in the mix here, I guess. And obviously that's quite positive. In terms of the macro impact on your thinking on orders over the balance of the year, Has that softened up a little bit, presumably, or is there more company-determined, you know, self-directed, you know, share gains and so forth there? I think at one point you'd been thinking double digits, we're 8%, you know, through the first half. How are you thinking about that?
I think, you know, Terry, I think our orders, you know, we basically have said that our organic revenue target is up 5 to 10%. You know, our orders growth basically supports that. I would expect our orders to continue to grow for the year. You know, I think FX adjusted in the high single digits, or, you know, in that range as the year goes on. But, you know, we've built an incredible backlog over the last period of time. So we've got a big equipment and service backlog. And so, you know, we've run, you know, kind of positive book-to-bill ratios for a long time. So, you know, I think some of that has to be factored in as well in terms of when you look at new orders.
Okay, and then just lastly, to clean up on WMC, I guess two parts. One, the statute of limitations comment, Keith, you're thinking end of this year is statute of limitations on what the 06 vintage is, and so that's why this doesn't, you know, look like it has a long tail. And then did I hear the reserve really didn't change a whole lot, even though the claims went up dramatically? And maybe I missed something there, but can you explain that?
Yeah. The statute of limitations, there's a, you know, I'm not giving any legal advice, but the limit that we're seeing that people are reacting to is 6 years. And so you're right in terms of the timing. You know, by the end of this year, that gets down to very small numbers of mortgages that are out there past that period. It seems to be what drove the spike in claims that, you know, happened in the quarter. Our reserve did increase dramatically. It went from $140 million at the end of first quarter to $491 million at the end of the second quarter, Terry.
But the $491 relative to what were the claims in the quarter?
Well, we had the claims balance was $562 at the end of first quarter. It went to $2.7. I think the thing that you can't see in our reserve balances anticipate future claims, incurred but not reported, it's called. So, you know, at the end of the first quarter, the balance of reserve relative to 562 had some future claims estimates in there. At the end of the second quarter, we've increased that estimate of future claims. It's not quite, it's less than 100% of the known claims balance, but it's a significant number.
So do we just on disc ops, you know, EPS from disc ops or loss from disc ops for the balance of the year, presumably that number goes a little higher as we move into the back part of the year?
Well, we think we've reserved appropriately. You know, I think the problem is that you just have to watch these long tail liabilities. You know, we anticipate a significant additional amount of claims in WMC. We'll have to see how we do against that. And in gray zone, we need to see those claims decline as we go through the second half of the year. Right now, we believe we're appropriately reserved.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey, so Keith, maybe could you walk through maybe the big components of the $555 million year-over-year increase in real estate?
Sure. If you look at the variance on earnings, let me get the right numbers for you. Lower marks and impairments. So we had $7 million of credit costs. And, you know, on a variance item versus last year, that's a couple hundred million dollars of benefit, $256 million on marks and impairments. And we also had, last year we had real estate losses that were not tax affected, so that was something that increased probably the one-time benefits in there, a little over $100 million in the quarter for real estate. And the base income is better from the core business on earnings on both the debt and the equity portfolio. I mean, at the end of the day, when you look at it, what really has happened is when you look like global valuations, we did not have declines in valuations on either the debt or the equity book, and that just changes the profile of our earnings in real estate, and then you earned a little bit by selling some properties and having some gains.
So, I mean, relative to this, you said the tax rate didn't run through that? I mean, the tax benefit?
No, the sale of BP is not in here, but last year we had losses that were not tax affected. And as a result, this year, by having none of that, you have an improvement year over year in taxes.
Okay, but sequentially moving forward, it doesn't sound like there's anything that unusual in this 220 number.
I think, you know, you're plus or minus 50, 70 million bucks on a run rate from taxes. Other than that, I think, you know, if we don't have any valuation changes and you continue to see the market where we are, you know, we feel pretty good about the outlook for the business.
Okay.
Yep.
And then just on the pricing in energy, gas and wind turbines down on units, but the pricing up. I mean, last year the pricing was down a bunch in those segments, particularly in 2Q. I mean, was some of this easy comp, or was it mix, or does that all feel real to you?
Help me out.
Look,
help me out with which you're on. Are you on orders or sales?
I'm on orders. So, you know, I think you set up 5 last year. You know, there were some significant order pricing declines. I'm on orders.
Absolutely.
You know, Shannon, I think there's always some mix, you know, kind of pulling through this, and I'm not sure that it's going to be up 5, you know, forever. But I do think we've seen it firming in commitments. We've seen that starting to flow through. And you know, I think we expect, you know, a decent pricing environment going forward.
I mean, you can see it swinging, right? You know, as you said last year, Q1, Q2, Q3, down 6, down 10, down 7 on thermal. Q1, Q4, down 12. Q1 was down 1, Q2 was up 5. You know, our estimate for the year right now is it should be somewhere around flat, but it's definitely changed the dynamics of supply and demand here on pricing for us.
And just last clarification from me, you offset the lower tax rate in the quarter with restructuring. G Capital now is going to be lower for the whole year. Or are you going to ramp restructuring to offset the incremental benefit, or how's that going to work?
Well, it's in it is in the G Capital run rate now. If you're somewhere in the mid single digits, so the disconnect in the quarter was the capital benefits of tax were in G Capital, and the restructuring was mostly in corporate. But you know. Right now, it'll be in the capital run rate at somewhere in the mid-single digits.
But for the second half, we now have a lower capital tax rate than we assumed before. Are you going to offset that 5% difference with some more restructuring, or is it just going to flow through?
I don't have it planned that way. You know, we are looking at restructuring associated with the cost out, and we are evaluating what we can do to continue to accelerate the actions to simplify the company and improve our margins. So there are activities we're working on, but we do not have it planned that way, Shannon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
The next question comes from Deane Dray with Citi.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Hey, Deane.
Hey, for GE Capital and specifically commercial lending, can you comment on net interest margin on new business being written versus business that's rolling off?
I don't have that number, Deane. I'll have to have Trevor get back to you with it.
But I think the net interest margin is very positive. You know, like most of the metrics, Deane, around margins are improving. But I think we can get you
for CLL.
Yeah, we can get you what the flow through is. Yeah.
Do you have it broadly for capital? Because that had been a data point, in the recovery that we saw significantly better net interest margin.
Well, it's up 50 basis points year over year.
Yeah, I think NIM captures some of that. I think, Deane.
Sure.
Okay, and then on the Tier 1 common, just make sure I have the math right, with the resumption of the dividend, that does put some pressure on Tier 1, maybe by 20 basis points or so, but can you calibrate the impact there?
Well, the earnings more than offset it in the capital ratios. If you look in the supplemental charts that we sent out, there's a breakdown of the impact on the Tier 1 ratios from earnings growth, foreign exchange, and dividends.
And then lastly, Keith, can you comment on how the tax benefits should help provide some ability to take down GE Capital assets faster? Would that be towards the red assets? And is that still about $80 billion and expectations for the balance of the year?
Yeah, I think the example we're using here is business properties. You know, we had an opportunity. We have a negotiated transaction to sell $5 billion of real estate assets. The fact that there's a tax benefit associated with the structuring enables us to remove $5 billion of assets that were, they're earning around $50 million. So it's a one-time transaction, and it's an example. But, I mean, for us, shrinking $5 billion of real estate is a good move strategically for the G Capital business.
You know, Dean, if you think back over the last 3 years, we've beat every commitment on the size of GE Capital. And, you know, one of the things I said at EPG that I think we're all aligned behind is to continue to make GE Capital smaller and more focused. And we're going to continue to do that. And I think BP is a good transaction for us. And
yeah. The red ending investment's about $75 billion. It's down 17% year over year. And the BP transaction is a good example of the team continuing to do a good job of running these assets down. If you look at the supplementals, you can see the dividend was 60 basis points on the Tier 1. and the earnings added 30 basis points, and that's pretty much why we went from 10.1 to 10.4 from Q1 to Q2. And even with that, though, if you look year over year, we're at 10.1, a full point up even with the dividend on Tier 1 Common. And in addition, when you look at total capital, the preferred stock that we issued enabled us to build our non-common Tier 1 capital and still enabled us to pay a dividend of $3 billion to the parent and keep the capital ratios above what we think we need to have.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks,
yep.
Dean.
The next question comes from Stephen Winoker with Sanford Bernstein.
And good morning.
Hey,
morning,
Stephen.
Hey, so first question on the order growth rate. How much, to what extent did acquisitions contribute at all to that number? What would it have been organically?
Total, it's about 2 points.
2 points.
Yeah,
okay.
There were most of the acquisitions now, as you get through the second quarter, are all in the run rates.
It was, you know, in FX was what, about
2 points?
About two.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of flattish.
Okay, and then and on the GE Capital reserving front, I think that was page 9 in the supplemental, you know, you talk about the environment continuing to improve, reserves coming down to 1.86% now from, I guess, 2.26 in the second quarter of 11.
Right.
Just give us a sense, maybe on the environmental side, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of this is driven by the U.S. and by your activity that you're seeing, but at the same time, we're seeing so much uncertainty and volatility globally and with what's going on in Europe, and you guys have a fair bit of assets over there. So how do you think about this, sort of being able to take reserves down relative
to you know, the reserves aren't being taken down. The write-offs are in excess of the reserves. We had about $100 million of impact on the balances or reserves from FX. But, you know, we're if you look at the numbers by business, the delinquencies are down in every single set of our operations except for the mortgage, which is up seasonally. Non-earnings are down in every single one of our businesses. Our write-offs are down in every single one of our businesses, quarter over quarter and year over year for all three of those metrics. So, you know, we continue to have a portfolio that shows improvements in its performance. And I think you're getting to run rate levels of new provisions on new business, and the only thing that will change that will be the mix between retail, which obviously has higher reserve levels, and the commercial, which has lower reserve levels.
And are you seeing the questions from, in terms of the progression through the quarter, maybe, or any kind of risks as you look out where you feel like that provision rate is in any way at risk as we head into what is potentially a more difficult macro environment?
Well, we've been in that environment for quite some time in Europe. I think the team has had to take a lot of operating actions, right? We've been very prudent from a risk perspective on increasing our underwriting standards. We've lowered our open lines on credits that were less creditworthy. In Europe, I mean, it's a full court press from the risk team about reducing our exposures in places where we don't want to have them. You know, we had to add reserves and take some provisions in Italy. I think that's a tough place. A previous quarter we had some in Hungary, but that stabilized. That was really a legislative change on mortgages. You know, we're watching the Spain consumer business. That's obviously a tough place. But, you know, things like the U.K. Continue to perform. Non-earnings are down. Delinquencies are down. Delinquencies are up a little bit seasonally, but not any. They're less than what normally we would have. And the main driver is, as we shrink that book, the non-earning assets and the delinquencies are a higher percent. It's not that they're going up in terms of dollars. So, I think that risk team has done a really good job with it in cooperation with the operating team. But right now, we're at sort of run rate levels. If we have specific things that happen, we'll reserve for them. The biggest change you're seeing across this portfolio is obviously the improvement in real estate values globally, both the debt and the equity book. In the quarter, from a valuation perspective, on the work that we did on the assets that were covered, had increases in the valuations. That's the first time in years, you know, versus pressure we've had in the equity and the debt book for, you know, almost 4 years here, Steve.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just maybe a last comment on China. What are you guys seeing a little more broadly in terms of demand over there and that trend given the...
You know, Steve, we're in a little bit of a different sequence, you know, because we're more long cycle oriented stuff. So, you know, I think the revenue was up 20% plus in the quarter. Order slightly below that, but still pretty strong. And healthcare is very strong. There's a conversion between coal and gas and the power sector. There's aviation remains, you know, pretty strong. So we're not on the short cycle side. We're more long cycle driven in China, and you know, we still see a decent environment for
us. Just give you some numbers. You know, the revenue was 1.4, it's up 24, as Jeff said. If you look at energy, it's up 34. Aviation was up 26 in the quarter. Healthcare was up 24. The orders are a little slower; they're up 6, but they're also a lot of some of the backlog is what we have there. So, you know, this is a pretty good performance. We expect a very strong performance across the year for China.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Julian Mitchell, Reddit.
Hey, Julian.
Hi. So firstly, on energy, you know, it's a slightly odd disconnect where your service orders are down and the pricing on the equipment's up. I mean, is there some risk, I guess, that you had sort of a big catch-up on service spares and that's now sort of run out of steam? Because I guess, you know, the improving fundamentals behind equipment orders and therefore pricing, you think should reflect in service as well.
I don't think there's any risk of that. I think what we saw in the business in the quarter from an orders perspective were that the customers are running their gas turbines as a result of the low natural gas pricing. Now, if you look at the revenue in energy and services, it was pretty solid in the quarter. So, you know, our team has a positive outlook as a result of the current operating environment. And, you know, for us, it's a question of when does it come through.
Okay, thanks. And then on the healthcare, I guess that was the business that had pricing down. You know, how worried are you about the ability to drive earnings up year on year in the second half? I understand that the Latin American mis-execution normalizes, but pricing is running at, what, -1.5?
You know, Julian, pricing is about, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the business
because
a little bit's on the, you know, you're a little bit on the computing learning curve, so that's been kind of the nature, you know, the CM rates are still pretty strong, and I think it's in some ways it's a little bit of apples and oranges. So, you know, I think we, you know, we see a U.S. healthcare market that's kind of flat, maybe up a couple points. As Keith said, Europe's very tough, but the emerging markets in healthcare are pretty dynamic. And so I think at EPG we said healthcare would be, you know, one plus to two pluses, so up single to double. We still think healthcare is going to have a good solid second half of the year.
You know, the orders, if you look at the book-to-bill in the quarter, were 1.11. At the half, it's 1.08. They built a little bit of backlog. They need to execute. That's what we're looking for in the second half here, Julian.
Great, thanks. And then just finally, the industrial CFOA was down year-on-year in Q2. Is that just around sort of working capital relating to wind orders? Or
It was really two things. We had about $200 million of pension funding. We haven't had that before. We expect that to be about $400 for the year, but as you know, in the K we put out, it was going to be $1 billion for the year, so 600 better for the year than we said. And then we just built inventory. We built $1 billion plus of inventory in the energy business. And as you said, it's mostly related to the wind. In the second half year, we're going to deliver close to 1,800 to 2,000 wind units, almost the full amount of volume we had for all last year. So we got a good outlook here in the second half in energy, and wind is going to be a big part of it.
Let me just go back to what Keith said on pension, just to make sure you guys understand it. So originally, I think our funding for this year was going to be $1 billion.
$1 billion, yes.
Now it's $400 million, so
right.
That's $600 million better. And I think we put in the K for
2.
Next
1.
Year, we put 2.1.
Could
now
be 200.
We think that's going to be extremely small, maybe less than $100 million bucks. So that's a big benefit in cash over the next 2 years that investors should understand.
Great, thanks.
Yep.
The next question comes from Jason Feldman with UBS.
Good morning.
Hey, Jason.
So regarding the discontinued operations charges, WMC and GE Money Japan, are there other divested finance assets where there's still recourse or retained liability that, you know, have the risk of popping up like this, or are these really the two big ones that are out there?
These are the two.
Okay. And on wind, you know, obviously it's challenging today. It's a cyclical market and the production tax credit expiring. But how do you feel about that business longer term, you know, given you know, changing economics with low gas prices and a fairly crowded competitive environment in wind?
You know, we said that the next year we anticipated 3 cents down versus this year in wind. So we're kind of getting ready for that. You know, the industry is reforming kind of outside the United States right now. So we've got some big orders in places like Brazil and Canada and Australia, Turkey, places like that. You know, we've navigated the cycles as well as anybody. I think we probably make as much money as the rest of the industry combined or something like that. And we have a pretty good window on the future. So
return
we
on capital is almost infinite here.
We haven't overinvested. We've got a very flexible supply chain, and so I think we're just going to kind of ride the wave. But we do think that it's 3 cents headwind next year, and we're already taking actions to kind of be able to offset that.
Okay, and lastly, you mentioned the potential for $5 million of real estate divestitures. There was the Everbank deal, a couple of weeks ago. Has the environment for potential asset sales improved materially recently, or is it just, now's the right time, and you've had kind of unique or, opportunistically taking advantage of what's out there?
Sure, it's a steady improvement. You've seen us talk about the valuation changes in real estate quarter to quarter to quarter. And this is just another sign that the market's getting better. I mean, we're able to move $5 billion of real estate assets at a gain to the company in total, and the team is going to continue to work on that. So I think, yes, valuations have continued to improve. Liquidity's come into the marketplace. If you've got a good property with a decent lease, you can extract a good price with these, in this low interest rate environment. Stabilization of valuations in Europe. The valuation in Europe was better than we anticipated as we closed the first quarter, and we expect that to continue.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Christopher Glynn with Oppenheimer.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Get a question on the different margin factors in the back half of the year. Year over year and versus the one half we're looking at. Volume leverage, better price flowing through, and the anniversary of the acquisitions. Can you kind of gauge what are the relative imports there?
Sure. I think Jeff said it. Value gap's going to be positive. That's the difference between the pricing we're getting and the raw material inflation that we experience, or deflation. That is positive 100 in the second quarter. We expect that to continue. R&D as a percent of revenue, we've talked about that a lot. We've peaked as a percent of revenue. We still are at a very high level in terms of percent of revenue, but it's peaked in terms of the impact on margin. Our total cost productivity, which is our ability to continue to deliver new volume and take advantage of leverage, it was positive 0.4 of a point in the second quarter. We can expect that to continue. And, the one dynamic that we're working our way through is the equipment and service margin mix. But as Jeff said, we expect margins to go positive in the third quarter, and we'll be positive in the fourth quarter. And, to get to the 30 basis points, we need an average of about 80 basis points in the second half. And, that's what our teams are working on right now.
Okay. And then on the Turbine Flex launch in the second half, how are you viewing that now, and is that impacting current demand, and how do you view the lag to regaining some share and competitive parity?
Chris, I think the Flex launch is going well. We had some great wins in Japan in the second quarter that were fantastic, and I still think our gas turbine share is going to be somewhere between 40% and 45%. So we want to retain kind of historical averages for that, and we'll continue to invest in new NPI in the gas turbine product line as well. So again, I think this is really important for us, and Flex has gone well, and I think you'll continue to see strong NPI efforts from GE.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
Our next question comes from Jeff Sprague with Vertical Research.
Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Good
morning, Jeff.
Hey, I guess I really don't understand your pension funding strategy. I mean, I understand the obligation has gone down under this law change, but your annual benefits payable is like $3 billion a year. Other companies have kind of remarked, yeah, the law has changed, but we don't want to let ourselves get further behind. Just kind of surprised the posture you're taking there, and, how do you see pension playing out then as we look further beyond, 2030?
Well, we've taken a lot of actions here. I think the most important action that we took was we closed the plan to new employees, Jeff. You may not be aware of that, but as a result of that action, the change in the future liability is dramatically, the curve has dramatically changed, and it's a huge amount of pressure we've taken off that pension plan in terms of the earnings rate that has to be realized over time. I think the benefit payments are less than what you talked about. I don't have the exact number, but it's not as high as what you said. And, you know, our team is working on a risk reduction strategy. You know, we're not going to full risk reduction in terms of going, you know, 100% to risk off in bonds, but we are reducing our risk-seeking exposures as we become additionally more funded from a risk of gap perspective. So, you know, the team's got a good asset allocation plan. They've got a good track record on returns. We've cut the future tail of this liability by closing the plan to new employees. And, you know, if we were going to fund $1 billion this year, we're going to fund $2 billion next year, we you know, our anticipation will be fully funded in a couple of years. This change in ERISA funding doesn't really change our outlook much on what we think we're going to do in terms of how we get to fully funded in that pension plan. And we're not seeking additional risk to do it.
All right. I was just looking at the annual report that says $3 billion in 2012. It actually shows it going up the next 4 or 5 years, not down. But
I don't think that's $3 billion. That includes all our health care costs. That includes retiree and employee health care costs. It's about $1 billion on pension, Jeff.
Okay. It says principal pension plan. Just on GECAS, obviously kind of all the, you know, the NEOs and everything were so new last year that there was no impact, and obviously you're going to roll up your sleeves in Q3. But, I mean, you obviously gave us a heads up to be on alert for this. Is there, you know, some early thoughts on what we should expect?
I don't have any signal from the team of anything unusual. You know, we continue to reduce our exposure to older assets, as you know, and we've taken some impairments quarter by quarter by quarter on some of the older assets that are less fuel efficient. You know, our fleet is in pretty good shape in terms of that, the percent of older assets, and I don't anticipate anything abnormal here in the third quarter, Jeff.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks.
Our next question comes from Nigel Cole with Deutsche Bank.
Hey, Nigel.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning.
I just want to turn attention to energy margins in 2013. I mean, I think everyone knows that wind's going to take a bit of a step down in 2013. How confident are you that you can maintain margin or even grow margin with, let's say, $2 billion less volume?
Well, just on a wind basis alone, if you remove the wind business at the margin, you're going to have a margin increase.
That's cheating. But that's
well, that's
true.
Reality. I mean, we're getting, penalized for it this year, Jeff.
But let's step through. Let Nigel again. Value gap positive. So you're going to have pricing ahead of deflation. We see pretty good headwind on that. I think we're going to have a good services mix next year. I think we like the way services could line up for next year. Structural cost down. You know, again, you're talking about, you know, guys, I would reiterate, we've said we're going to take $2 billion of cost out in 12, 13, and 14, and we're on our way to doing that. And that's going to take, you know, G&A as a percentage of revenue is going to go down a couple hundred basis points around this place. So you're going to get some structural cost out. So you're going to have good value gap. You're going to have positive mix. You're going to have pretty good service, and you're going to have structural cost down. You know, I think that's a pretty good lineup.
Right, but looking at wind in itself, you know. I know it's a very, you know, it's a highly variable cost business. If we go down from say 7 to say 5, what happens to wind margins next year?
Oh, I would bet that wind, just intra wind, right, Nigel, that's what you're asking.
Exactly.
Yeah, wind margins will probably go down a little bit, but it's really de-verticalized business, you know,
sure.
And so I think it's not going to be kind of what you think, you know. But you know, just because of the volume we have this year. My hunch is that the margin rate just intra wind will probably go down slightly.
Okay, and then moving to the broader energy business, the move to back to positive pricing orders is great news. Can you just remind us what is the lead time on pricing in the order book? I mean, when do we start to see that coming through the P&L?
12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
About 9 months
by product line.
Yeah. So about 1Q13, and then you know, stripping out energy management, so that's a $6 billion. BU, I think, will be your smallest segment by far. Is the intention to grow that, you know, if we're thinking about the sources of acquisition funding going forward, you know, should we view energy management as up there, you know, top one or top two?
You know, I think there's segments within energy management, Nigel, that we like, you know, that we might do some of the smaller acquisitions in. I think the key thing is, again, to give investors kind of a pure play on the power generation side, a pure play on the oil and gas side, and a pure play on the energy management side. And I think that's what many people have been asking for, and that's what you're going to get in the structure. Yeah.
Okay. And then just finally, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds of corporate expenses, but it's a tough line to model, and it seems to be running above the $3 billion ex-pension guidance for fiscal 12. Are we still running towards that, Keith, or should we expect that to come down the second half of the year?
Say that again? The $3 billion corporate. Are we still running to the
$3 billion? $3 billion corporate for the year, yes. You know, we're about $1.5 billion at the half, and there's some ups and downs on one-timers, but that's the estimate for the year, yes.
Yeah.
Got it. Thanks a lot.
I just want to – the pension out of the trust is about $3 billion. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff Sprague, sorry about that.
Yep. Hey, Chanel, wait, we're a little over our hour. Why don't we take one more question and then close out?
Sure. Our final question comes from Steve Tusa, J.P. Morgan.
Hey, sorry, I just had a follow-up. So on the energy services decline in orders, what you're saying is they're running their plants, so you're not seeing kind of the normal, pace of orders. I guess that would suggest that, I mean, at some time they've got to service these things, and, if they're running them for longer hours. So is that actually – that's actually a push-out?
Yeah, I think, Steve, like the flow orders that would tend to happen in shutdowns and stuff like that are slower because the guys are running the plants. So I think that.
But that's got to come at some point,
good
right?
Good news, again, with cheap gas prices, everything we've thought about this is true. You know, guys are running their plants hard, and they're pushing out service and stuff like that, and I think that'll come back at some point.
Right, right. Okay, just wanted to clarify that. Thanks a lot.
No further questions. At this time, Mr. Schoenberg, do you have any additional remarks?
Great. Yeah, thank you, everyone. The replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon on our website. We're distributing our quarterly supplemental data scheduled for GE Capital, as we always do today. Just a couple few announcements here regarding investor events. You know, Jeff, Emma will be hosting a GE Infrastructure investor meeting, which will include all of our infrastructure business leaders. The meeting will be held on Thursday, September 27th. In the New York City area. More details regarding the event will be sent in the upcoming weeks. We hope everyone can make it. Finally, our third quarter 2012 earnings webcast will be on Friday, October 19th. As always, we'll be available to take your questions today. Thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the presentation. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.